on the case of the United States against Rao. Ms. Scott.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, counsel for the government. The District Court erred when it determined that conspiracy to commit robbery was a crime of violence when sentencing Mr. Rao. So it is for that reason that we ask that this Court reverse and remand to the lower court for resentencing consistent with the finding that conspiracy to commit robbery is not a crime of violence. We first start
if
our analysis.
Robbery is a crime of violence. And the guideline says crime of violence includes conspiring to commit such offenses. And it's a guidelines issue, isn't it?
It is a guidelines issue, Your Honor.
So why isn't this clear? That robbery is crime of violence. Conspiracy to commit a crime of violence is itself a crime of violence. Why isn't that the end of the case?
Well, Your Honor, in looking at the application note that defines what a crime of violence is and specifically states that robbery is a crime of violence and therefore the conspiracy to commit robbery would be a crime of violence, we would note that that application note was put into place prior to the Supreme Court's rulings in Begay, James, and most recently United States versus Sykes. In looking at the Supreme Court's rulings in those cases, which of course address the 924E enhancement under
But are you saying robbery is not a crime of violence, or that the that this application note that says crime of violence includes a conspiracy, is that what you think Begay did in?
The application,
robbery is a crime of violence.
Your Honor.
That.
Your Honor, the drafting of the Indiana statute, it is a divisible statute. Our robbery statute is a divisible statute. We take the position that absent a judicial finding that the robbery occurred.
It would be a nonviolent robbery.
Well, one way that a robbery can be committed under the Indiana statute is by fear. This court has held that when it comes to an intimidation conviction, for instance, that may or may not be a crime of violence, and that it's not a crime of violence if, say, for instance, I say, if you don't do this, I will steal your dog. That is placing a person in fear and therefore intimidating them.
Steal your dog?
It's just an example, Your Honor. One that doesn't require bodily a threat or use of force toward another person. You can place a person in fear without acting in a violent manner. The Indiana statute is one that is divisible. One prong of it states that it is the use or threatened use of force against a person, and the other, and then there's an or, placing a person in fear. And so it is the position. It is our position that merely placing a person in fear for purposes of carrying out a robbery.
I just don't see what any of this has to do with Begay. We've said that when the guidelines and the statute have identical text, we'll use Begay and its successors to understand the guidelines as well as Section 924. But given the application note, the guidelines and the statute don't have identical text. There's no parallel to the application note in the statute. So we've got something extra from the Sentencing Commission. Why should we be disregarding it?
Your Honor, understanding that argument, that position rather, and respecting that, we would suggest that in order to clear up an area of law that is becoming quite ambiguous, so to speak, it is best to keep the analysis under 924E and under the 4B1.2 enhancement analogous to one another. And let's hypothetically say
I'm just lost. We have said that the Supreme Court has said that the language of application notes is conclusive. It's adopted by the same process that creates the text. So we've got this application note which says robbery is a crime of violence, conspiracy to commit a crime of violence is treated as a crime of violence. The Sentencing Commission has addressed and directly answered the question that's being raised here. just can't see what Begay has to say about that.
Well, Your Honor, the application note can't be inconsistent with the current Supreme Court law, and that's where...
There's nothing in the Supreme Court which construes the guidelines. The only way we get from Begay to here is on the principle that when the guidelines are identical to the statute, we'll just carry it over. And your problem is the guideline is not identical to the statute.
Your Honor,
in this respect, anyway.
Understanding that, I suppose the best kind of way to view it is if the guidelines were to articulate that drunk driving, for instance, is in fact a crime of violence, we know the Supreme Court has held otherwise when conducting analysis under 924E. So it would be incompatible
with... There is no statutory requirement that the Sentencing Commission define crime of violence in the same way Congress did in either Section 16 or Section 924. Is there such a requirement?
Your Honor, there is no statutory requirement.
Exactly. The Commission can say, for our purposes, crime of violence includes shoplifting. We're just using it in a weird, counterintuitive way. And I should think that would be dispositive, because the Sentencing Commission could say, if you commit three shoplifting offenses, you get the following increase in your guideline range. Instead of doing that, it says, we're going to define shoplifting as a crime of violence, and there you go. Any violation of the statute there?
Your Honor, I think that perhaps the angle that we use in making this analysis is that this Court has consistently stated that the analysis, they've attempted to bring parity when reviewing crimes of violence and violent felonies.
The text is the same. But, you know, that's where we are. The text isn't the same here.
Well, so the definition of crime and violence, of crime of violence, doesn't tie it to any particular state statute, right? So the Dawe case is actually not a crime of violence under the guidelines, because there has to be a threat of physical force against a person.
I think that was the point. It's divisible. But, I mean, you have sort of another issue in that what's been suggested is that when the underlying crime is a crime of violence, like robbery, then we know, at least from the James case, that another inchoate crime, attempt, is also seen, even under your parity issue with ACCA. That's a crime of violence. So if attempt is, then conspiracy is just a step further out. They're both things that don't really bring about necessarily the burglary or the robbery or whatever it is. So I think your argument is in some tension with James itself.
Your Honor, the difference, but we would ask the Court to consider that there's a difference between conspiracy and attempt. Under the Indiana statute, conspiracy merely requires an agreement between persons to commit a felony. The felony could be any list of felonies under the Indiana statutes and an overt act requirement.
But why isn't that even a little bit like Sykes? I mean, people who are going to go to the trouble to enter into an agreement to commit a felony haven't actually hurt anybody yet, but thinking of the term risk in the statute, the risk of harm certainly must be higher vis-a-vis the people who have agreed, just as the risk of harm, the people who are, fleeing law enforcement is higher. They might not hurt anybody, but the risk is definitely greater.
Well, Your Honor, the difference between a conspiracy and an attempt is that, you know, you and I could have a conversation and we could conspire to, for instance, go rob the bank down the street. We could pull the floor plan for that bank right here on a computer in this courtroom, and we've committed an actual crime, but we've not done anything that is violent in a sense.
But the risk that we might is surely greater at that point if we've taken the trouble of really entering into such an agreement.
Your Honor, the risk that we may move forward with the conspiracy is something that we don't believe there's statistical data to support. Understanding that the Sentencing Commission, when they put into effect the guideline provisions, they do some research, but I'm not sure that it's even possible to find statistics that would, in fact, support any analysis that persons who otherwise have a conversation about something are more likely to act upon it. It gives a lot of weight, in a sense, to the fact that conspiracies may or may not be carried out. I mean, a conspiracy is an agreement, and that stops at an agreement. An attempt is an act beyond the conspiracy. The substantive felony is something more than that. So I'm not sure that we necessarily have an agreement that makes something more violent because two people have had a conversation and perhaps looked at something on the internet which would fulfill the conspiracy statute under Indiana law. And it's for that reason that we would ask that you reverse the remand to the lower court with the finding consistent with the fact that conspiracy to commit robbery is not a crime of violence. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Rinko.
May it please the court, Ms. Scott, Matthew Rinko on behalf of the United States. It's the government's position that there are a number of reasons why this court could find that the district court committed no error in sentencing Mr. Raup the manner that it did.
Why don't you give your best reason first?
Beg your pardon, Judge?
Why don't you give your best reason first? You said many reasons.
Well, the chief reason is simply that the guidelines direct the calculation of the score in this case and essentially direct the result that the district court arrived at. The guidelines specifically include conspiracy to commit a crime of violence as a crime of violence, as an enumerated offense in the application notes. Indeed, it would have been error for the district court to ignore those application notes given the precedent of this court and the Supreme Court. Those application notes are not to be ignored. They are binding unless they contravene the Constitution or federal statute or make absolutely no sense when read in conjunction with the guideline itself. None of those arguments are being made by Mr. Raup. He simply says that Begay and Sykes and James somehow silently, implicitly overrule or supersede the guideline application notes. But it seems apparent to the government that in reading Begay and James and Sykes, they make no mention whatsoever about overruling or superseding anything, federal statute, let alone the sentencing guidelines. In fact, none of those cases, from the government's recollection, involved sentencing guideline calculations.
So what if the sentencing guidelines in the tax sections of the guidelines said that we think people who cheat on their income taxes have committed crimes of violence? There was some application note to that effect. Would you think we would have to follow that? I mean, do we care, in essence, how well-founded the application note is?
Judge, I believe there's a discussion to be had about whether or not the application notes can be overruled by court precedent. In this particular...
Well, there's a contradiction, because in the definitional section of 4B1.2, there is a definition of a crime of violence, of which the first section is the normal understanding of robbery. But the application note, second paragraph, says that robbery is a crime of violence. And then the question is, well, does that include the dog case? I don't believe the dog case, actually.
So the government's continuing position would be...
But is it your position that because of this application note, whatever is called robbery is a crime of violence?
Yes, Judge. At this point, it is.
Whatever is called by anybody robbery, or whatever is called as a matter of federal law robbery. This is, of course, the Taylor question. Burglary
exactly
is a crime of violence. The Supreme Court says that means burglary as we in the federal system understand it, generic burglary. If a state defines robbery to include threatening to tickle your grandmother, that presumably would not be robbery for the purpose of the guidelines.
Or what if the state defined robbery as going up and telling, handing somebody a piece of paper saying, I'm entitled to take your briefcase, by order of the sheriff of Cook County, and so it's voluntarily relinquished. no violence at all there. It's a lie, it's trick, it's whatever you want to call it. But would you call that a crime of violence?
Well, Judge, obviously, and having to analyze the facts of that particular case, I mean, we look at...
Because I just made it up, so no, I'm sure you didn't.
Well, what does Indiana mean by fear? Because you can imagine a case where, suppose I tell you, you have cancer, and the only thing that will save you is my treatment, which will cost you $10,000. Now, you're very fearful because you believe my diagnosis. That man puts you in fear. And I'm using that to get $10,000 from you. But do you think that would actually be robbery in Indiana?
And then you give him a placebo.
Would that be robbery in Indiana?
Judge, the Indiana statute, in my view, requires an installation of the actual use, the threatened use of physical force or placing someone in fear.
Well, your opponent gave the example of the dog, which is a threat of force, but not against a person unless the person is defined to include dogs.
I'm not sure I understand the...
Well, she said there's a case which says that threatening to hurt a person's dog in order to get money is robbery under Indiana law because of the provision about fear. And I wondered if you had a view on what Indiana law...
I'm not sure I can respond directly to that. I do know that based on the government's research in this case, this court has held that robbery under Indiana law is always a crime of violence. And specifically the Lewis case that the government cited in its brief.
But the court may have been thinking of robbery in a conventional sense rather than this exotic fear-inducing act. Mm-hmm.
Suppose Indiana defined as robbery going up to a person and saying, unless you give me all your money, I am going to write a nasty editorial about you in the next day's newspaper. Right? And for fear that there'll be bad publicity, the person hands over his money. And Indiana defines that as robbery. Would it be covered by this guideline? Would that offense be covered by this guideline?
In the government's view, there would have to be a generic definition of robbery.
A federal definition of generic robbery, just like the federal definition of generic burglary. You think turning over your money for fear of a nasty editorial would come within the definition of generic robbery? Now, of course, I doubt very much that Indiana would view that particular crime as robbery.
They'd probably call it blackmail.
Blackmail or extortion.
Yeah. Well, an extortion is an enumerated offense under the ACCA guideline, and if we look at the cases that have come out of this court that indicate that these definitions are read essentially interchangeable, if there was an attempt at extortion, it would be an enumerated offense.
That's what paragraph 2 of the application note says. It says extortion is also a violent offense.
Exactly.
But they're thinking of, you know, extortion involving threats rather than blackmail.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. A lot of extortion in Chicago is if you don't pay me a bribe, you won't get your building permit.
In this particular case, while the definition
otherwise involves conduct that presents a serious potential risk of physical injury sounds as if they're thinking of extortion as a threat, right? Not blackmail. Blackmail doesn't present a threat of physical injury.
In this particular case, Your Honor, on these facts, the robbery was an actual robbery. It was a strong-armed robbery. In this particular case, even if we look beyond the...
Well, it depends how picky you want to be about this definition. It says crime of violence has an element, the use, attempted use, or threatened use of, and if And if somehow that's not an element because of this fear thing that greatly expands it, then you'd have some problem, unless you want to say that we can look at the facts, not just at the statute.
In this particular case, the statute being divisible, conspiracy can be committed a number of ways. It is important to look at what is the element, what is the actual crime being conspired to. And we have, as an element of the conspiracy itself, the need to prove that there was a robbery that was being planned. We also have to prove an overt act, which in this case itself constituted a crime of violence. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.